This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. In this hour, the federal budget, health care reform, and the work of Congress with Western Wisconsin 3rd District Congressman Ron Kind. And then a preview of this year's growing season and what it means for area farmers and all of us for that matter. Debate over a budget deal to keep the federal government running for the rest of its fiscal year recently prompted competing budget plans from House Republicans and President Obama that include spending cuts and potential tax increases as a way to fund future government spending. Democratic Wisconsin Congressman Ron Kind of La Crosse talked about the economy, tax fairness, and the one-year anniversary of health care reform in an interview with Wisconsin Public Radio earlier this week. He began by telling WPR's John Davis that the deal cut by Republicans and Democrats to keep the federal government operating wasn't a perfect deal.
But it was necessary to keep the government functioning, to keep things operating. I think the president, and I shared his concern, was worried about what a government shutdown would mean to the economic recovery that's ongoing right now. We've had 12 consecutive months of private sector job growth. We're starting to gain some traction, and we don't need any more headwind when it comes to good jobs being created again in this economy. Right now, we're wrestling with higher energy prices because of the instability of North Africa and the Middle East. But, you know, it wasn't a perfect deal. I felt that if the far right and the far left are both criticizing it equally, then it was probably the best deal that can be had, and we needed to move it forward for the remaining 6 months. And that's all it covers is the remaining 6 months of this fiscal year.
You do see the economy improving. There are signs of that. Why does it not feel like that?
Well, because it's not coming back very fast. And if you look at the jobs that are being created, a lot of it are lower paying wage jobs, which isn't what you need to sustain a family and to make ends meet. But last month, we had about 230,000 private sector jobs created. That was on the heels of the previous month of about 220,000 private sector jobs that were created. This is going to take a while. I mean, we had a complete financial meltdown here in this country and the housing market that just collapsed. Housing is not coming back. It's not leading the recovery effort. It's going to take even longer for housing to stabilize again. And so it's different in that respect. When you have a major financial crisis like we've come through, the recovery is not going to be the typical V-shape that you would like to see with jobs coming back in short order. But having said that, there was a lot of debt that's being deleveraged or paid down right now, whether it was corporate debt or individual debt. And in the long run, that's healthy to do. In the short term, if everyone decides to do it at the same time, you get the economy that we have, which is 70% consumer-driven. But if consumers are saving more, paying more down on their credit card debt and other debt, they're not going out making purchases. Therefore, businesses aren't making the sales. And if they're not selling, they're not going to be hiring that people that quickly. So that's kind of what we're in right now and what we're trying to work through.
Are the days of the families sustained job over in this country?
I don't think so, but we've got to be smart as we do move forward. I've been advocating for an innovation agenda for our nation. The president during the State of the Union earlier this year talked about the same thing, an American Competes agenda. Through important investments in education, workforce development issues, broadband expansion, scientific and medical and technological research, and new discoveries that will come from that. But it's going to be an evolving economy. Manufacturing is coming back. We're still the number one manufacturing nation in the world. The closest rival would be China, but we're still outproducing China by over 40% every year. But none of this is a given. We got to work hard and make the investments that are needed to ensure that we've got the best educated, best trained workforce and a very dynamic entrepreneurial type of economy, which can lead to new discoveries and therefore new industries and businesses being created. Along with that comes a manufacturing agenda that I've been advocating. In fact, it's on my congressional website, starting with shutting down tax loopholes that reward companies for shipping jobs overseas. It's silly that that exists in the tax code, and yet efforts that I and others have led in order to close those tax loopholes are not supported by my Republican colleagues because they view that then as a tax increase, and they are opposed to any type of tax increase, even one that would shut down loopholes sending jobs overseas.
Are you of the opinion that the government can, if not create jobs, foster an environment where jobs are created?
John, I am, because just the last couple of days, again this morning here in La Crosse, I've been holding small business forums and getting entities, agencies together at the federal, state, and local level just to show what type of programs and resources are available for small businesses. And here in Wisconsin, we have over 430,000 small businesses throughout the state. They employ more people in the state than any other business that we have. And they're very important to the economy of Western Wisconsin. And they will be the locomotive that will help pull us out of this long, very difficult, great recession that we're starting to emerge from. And there are resources that are available from the Small Business Administration that's working with our local lenders on guaranteed loan programs that small businesses can qualify. And for most small businesses, that means either success or failure, having access to those lines of credit, to the loans that they need to operate and to expand and hire more people. I had a representative in from the Internal Revenue Service, of all places, but the IRS has a very proactive campaign to educate small businesses in regards to the tax relief that they can receive, things that we've implemented over the last couple of years, from accelerated depreciation to immediate expensing to more tax credits for a startup of businesses. That's where the greater job growth is going to occur with these new businesses that are just getting up and going. And yet there's a lot that's been done over the last couple of years within the tax code to help small businesses. I had an official in from the Department of Commerce talking about export opportunities that we have as a state, working with businesses large and small. The Small Business Development Center that is located right here at UWL, but also in Platteville and Eau Claire, their whole function is to work with businesses in the community to help them with technical assistance, how to do things, how to obtain credit, how to put together a business plan. These are all government finance programs that do assist the private sector to help them get on their feet. So there has to be that partnership that exists. But we've got a very dynamic, powerful free market economy. It will remain a free market economy. But I also believe that the free market is in need of adult supervision from time to time. The most classic example of that was the fact that we had the financial meltdown and large Wall Street banks that wanted to act like casinos rather than lending institutions, and it led to the meltdown of our economy. I think it's important that we get the referees back on the field to enforce the rules and make sure that they're behaving honestly. And we didn't get that in recent years, which I think contributed to the economic crisis that we're coming out of right now.
It seems as though there's a tax imbalance in this country. Do you agree with that? You know, there's been a lot of reporting recently about the fact that a lot of corporations do not pay taxes in this country.
You know, I agree with the president that if we're going to have a sensible, honest, long-term deficit reduction plan, it's going to have to entail comprehensive tax reform. The tax code is riddled with a bunch of special breaks, loopholes that exist. And if you're a wealthy individual or a big company that can afford to hire fancy tax attorneys or accountants, you're going to be able to take full advantage of those exclusions that exist in the tax code for you. And that's why the president's talking about balance when it comes to deficit reduction. Everyone contributing their fair share with the idea of shared sacrifice involved. And I think Warren Buffett has something when he's complaining that it is wrong that we live in a nation where a guy of his wealth is paying a lower effective tax rate than the receptionist is in his own firm, because most of his income is derived from dividends and capital gains. Yet that's being taxed at 15% right now. He has a lot of opportunities to take write-downs and exclusions on his tax return. And that's why, on average, the wealthiest 2% are paying an effective tax rate of just 17% in this nation, much lower than what most working families are. We've got to correct that imbalance, and I think it's going to be important that we do in order to deal with these deficits in an honest fashion.
How do you go about doing that?
Well, you do it by calling on what the president has been asking for, and that's allowing the tax rates to return to the 1990 levels before the 2001-2003 Bush tax cuts took effect. Because let's remember, back in the 1990s, there was a very healthy economic dynamic that was created. We had a slightly higher marginal tax rates at the top, which helped contribute to 4 years of budget surpluses when we were actually paying down the national debt rather than adding to the national debt. There were 24 million private sector jobs created during that time period. There was wealth growth for low-income families as there was for the wealthiest families, too. That was taking place simultaneously. But since the enactment of those tax cuts, there's been a serious revenue drain, but also coupled with the policies that were pursued, from two wars that weren't paid for, the two tax cuts that weren't paid for, a new prescription drug plan, a largest expansion of entitlement spending since Medicare was first created, not a nickel of it paid for. Is there a little wonder that we're dealing with huge budget deficits today? you know, with the lower marginal tax rate, especially for the most wealthy, coupled with these huge spending proposals that were enacted, of course there's going to be a huge gap. And that's where we got to try to bring balance back into any serious deficit talk.
We're talking today with the Wisconsin Congressman Ron Kind, a La Crosse Democrat. We saw President Obama and Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan come out with competing budget plans. What are the major differences between the two?
Well, listen, you know, Paul's a friend of mine. We've teamed up on a variety of measures, not least of which farm bill reform, try to get away from these huge taxpayer subsidies going to large agribusiness. But what Paul refers to in his budget as path to prosperity, I view more as the path to ruin, the path to poverty, because what he's calling for the elderly, the children, the most vulnerable in our society, to have to accept all the cuts, and that the most wealthy will continue to enjoy the tax breaks that they get during the Bush administration, which, by the way, is at a 50-year low right now, those rates. And that doesn't seem to me, and I think the president pointed it out this past week in his speech, the type of shared sacrifice or balance that we need to move forward. Take the Medicare program as a classic example. Now, Paul Ryan in the Republican budget is proposing to dismantle Medicare as we know it. It would cease to exist as we know Medicare today. In fact, seniors would instead be given a limited amount of money, a private voucher, and told to go out into the marketplace and shop for an affordable private health insurance plan for themselves. It won't work. It won't work on a couple of levels, not least of which is the reason Medicare had to be created to begin with back in 1965 is because private health insurance companies do not want to insure seniors. They're in the business of making money, making profits. Seniors are not profitable. As we get older, we consume more health care. Most seniors have chronic illnesses and disease that require special attention and special medical care. And that's why Medicare had to be created to begin with. And now to roll back the clock, the pre-1965, giving seniors a voucher that will not cover the true expenses that they face is asking them to pay more and get less in their health care. And in fact, the Congressional Budget Office looked at the budget proposal that they offered and said that it would double the amount of out-of-pocket expense coming out of seniors from $6,000 a year to well over $12,000 a year. I don't know that many seniors in western Wisconsin that can afford that type of hit. And that doesn't even get to the whole issue of whether they can even find a private health insurance company that's willing to insure them. And so this is going to have to be a serious conversation that we have as a nation, who we are and what we want to become and whether we're going to allow seniors to age with dignity and respect in our society. And so this is the beginning of a much larger conversation that I hope everyone's going to tune into and pay close attention and also weigh in, because there are two distinct visions of where our country should go.
Are you supporting the president's budget plan, or are there things in there that give you pause?
No, I think what the president is talking about, the framework that he laid out, does make a lot of sense. It would fund the innovation or the American competes agenda that we need. And that's investment in education, especially those STEM studies of science, technology, engineering, math, where most of the job growth is occurring and will occur in the future. Broadband expansion, investment in science, the infrastructure investment that we have to meet. This all has to be paid for. And then the comprehensive tax reform so that we have a fair tax code for corporations and individuals alike. But any proposal that immediately is advocating continued tax breaks to the wealthiest in this country who are already at a 50-year low with their tax rates would then naturally lead to huge cuts in vital programs, especially those areas of investment that are crucial to help this economy grow and enable us to outbuild and to outcompete and to out-innovate any other country in the world. That just won't happen on its own.
I know we just passed the one-year anniversary of healthcare reform. Is that plan having an impact at all on the cost of health care?
You know, my overall grade on the Affordable Care Act that was passed is an incomplete. It is just too early to tell because some big things haven't happened yet that's called for. One is the type of reforms and the way health care is delivered. It's going to take time, although we are basing it on models of care that have proven very successful, the Gunderson, the Mayo, and the Marshfield models, which are very integrated, coordinated, patient-focused, leading to great results, but at cost savings too. That's going to take time. The payment reform is something that won't happen overnight. You don't change the way you pay for one-fifth of the entire U.S. economy, healthcare spending, overnight. Yet we have things in place now, including a way to change the fee-for-service system under Medicare, which is volume-based payments, to a fee-for-value reimbursement system. That, I think, is going to be the ultimate judgment and verdict on healthcare reform, whether we can reward good outcomes as opposed to just more of things being done, regardless of result. That's really what's driving the cost and bankrupting our nation. And that is going to take a couple of years to make that payment conversion. But what is happening? Today, 37,000 children in western Wisconsin that have a pre-existing condition can no longer be denied health care coverage because of that pre-existing condition. I think that's a good thing. 15,000 small businesses in western Wisconsin are eligible for a tax credit for the health care premiums that they're paying for their employees, making it more affordable for small businesses, family farmers, to be able to afford health care coverage. I think that's a good thing. Or the fact that 57,000 seniors in the state of Wisconsin are getting a 50% price discount now under the Part D prescription drug plan because of the negotiation that we were able to do with drug companies. Something, by the way, that was prohibited in the 2004 prescription drug bill. Remember, they included language in it that made it illegal for us to even discuss price with the drug companies, which drove prices up then. And now we're able to go back and be able to provide this year already a 50% price discount for seniors who would normally have to pay all that out of pocket. I think that's helpful. And also the other big thing coming up is in 2014, the creation of these health insurance exchanges or purchasing pools. So small businesses, family farmers, individuals finally have a place where they can go and shop amongst competing plans with complete transparency. So they know what they're going to get in benefits, how much it's going to cost, and they're going to be able to finally compare apples with apples. And then that, too, will be coupled with a 50% tax credit for small businesses and premium payments for lower-income families who can't afford to obtain health care on their own. And that will take effect in 2014, introducing much-needed competition in the health insurance market that doesn't exist today.
These long-term changes, are you hopeful they're going to take effect? I know there's an effort, especially among Tea Party, to repeal this.
Yeah, I think that would be unfortunate because now is not the time to go backwards. And repealing it without having a good plan in its place just takes us back to the status quo. And we know what the status quo is going to bring with 100% certainty. I mean, higher prices for all Americans, more people uninsured, businesses large and small less able to compete globally because of the cost of rising health care in this country, and our public budget deficits continuing to explode in the future because this is the biggest cost driver with our budgets today, rising health care costs. So repealing it just takes us back to square one, the status quo, which is nothing but bad outcomes from my perspective. And in fact, the Republican budget proposal that they came out, they were being very disingenuous with it because they pocketed, they used all the cost savings that we had under the Affordable Care Act, something that they severely criticized us over the last 2 years, ran hundreds of millions of dollars worth of attack ads accusing Democrats of gutting Medicare and cutting spending. And yet the budget that they produce uses all of those cost savings themselves, and then they cut Medicare even further. But more importantly, they do nothing to address the 50 million uninsured people that we have in our country. They just ignore that problem. But that cost is built into that current health care system, because when those folks get hurt or they get injured and they go in and get care, that cost is transferred onto people who do have health insurance. And on average, we're paying an additional $1,100 a year, those with health care today, because of the cost of the uninsured. And my Republican colleagues punt on that issue. They have no answer to the uninsured population in our country. And that was one of the major reasons why the Affordable Care Act costs some money. But we had to make hard decisions. The president said it had to be completely paid for. We found offsets to pay for it all. And in fact, we did more than that. The Congressional Budget Office said that with passage of the Affordable Care Act, our budget deficit will decline by $1.3 trillion over the next 20 years because of the reform and the cost savings that we have in it. So their call to repeal it would merely add another $1 trillion to our debt during that time, and they don't have an answer for it.
I know you heard a lot in the year leading up to the passage of health care reform. In the year since it's been in place, have you heard much good or bad from constituents, and what do you hear most often?
Well, I've been hearing more Thank yous from folks, quite frankly, back home. From those who have pre-existing conditions, adults and children alike, who can finally go out and obtain coverage right now. Small businesses who are just now realizing the tax credits that they qualify for. And in fact, a recent study nationwide shows there's been a huge uptick in small businesses offering health care coverage for their employees, mainly driven by the tax credits that are making it more affordable for them to do so. That's a very positive development. Parents who have come up to me thanking me for the fact that now they can keep their young adult, their son or daughter, on their plan through age 26 when they're still in school or just starting with their own lives. What a relief that has been to those parents. And so we've been getting a lot of that feedback. But there is still a lot of questions out there. There's still some complexity that we're going to need to work through, and a lot more that has yet to take effect that we're going to have to monitor very closely. But that's the point. The point of this was not with the passage of the Affordable Care Act, the work and the conversation stops. No, this is just the beginning. And we're going to need to have the ability to track it very closely, to learn what is working and what isn't working, and then change what isn't. We're going to have to do that. And people who think that this debate is over now doesn't realize that in many ways the work and the discussion is just starting.
I wanted to touch also on what's going on in Northern Africa and the Middle East. The military response in Libya, you were not a fan of the way we approached that, correct?
I was very concerned about the president's decision to execute the no-fly zone, although I did commend him that he took time and built international support for doing it. The Arab League, for the very first time, was requesting intervention against another Arab nation. Never before have they done that. So that was an important change in that region. NATO was willing to step in. He was able to get UN Security Council approval. Russia or China could have very easily have vetoed that, but chose not to. That was an important signal, too, to the dictators in the region, that countries were not just going to sit back and watch slaughter take place. But I was concerned that the mission was ill-defined, and it lacked clear objectives, and it could lead to a stalemate in a prolonged new military engagement at a time when we've got two wars going on. Our troops are stretched to the limit already. We're battling huge budget deficits at home, and this will be another drain on our treasure and on our troops if it's not quickly resolved. And also the precedent that it was establishing now, that whenever there's a civil war in any country throughout the world, which invariably leads to bloodshed, is it now the policy of the United States of America to intervene in every one of those civil wars for humanitarian causes? We need to start recognizing the limits of American power and that we're overstretching ourselves, which is a contribution to the big budget deficits that we're facing today. So for all of those reasons, I express severe doubt and reservations in regards to Libya.
Western Wisconsin 3rd District Democratic Congressman Ron Kind. John Davis's interview with Congressman Kind is available in its entirety on our website, wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to what we just heard discussed, the interview includes Kind's perspectives on why Social Security reform is being ignored in the upcoming budget debate and the impact of the Tea Party movement in Congress. Coming up in the next half hour of Newsmakers, Wisconsin Public Radio's Steve Risom takes over with a discussion on what to expect in farming this summer, just now as farmers wait to get into the fields to plant their crops. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto.